Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, January 2, 2018. Troika countries condemn violations of ceasefire agreement signed in Addis Ababa last month by various South Sudanese stakeholders. And a South Sudanese Catholic bishop calls for peace in his New Year message. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United States, the United Kingdom, and Norway have condemned violations to the ceasefire agreement signed on December 21st in the Ethiopian capital between various warring parties in South Sudan. The Troika heads of mission for the three countries released a statement today saying they share deep concerns about the recently signed IGAD ceasefire. The statement says Troika is deeply concerned and express their sadness over the violations of the cessation of hostility agreement in Unity States Bentiu. The Troika says it strongly condemns the violations and are calling on all parties who signed the cessation of hostilities to respect the agreement. It also says that Troika will go after field commanders or their immediate bosses to abide by the agreement. The statement urged the leaders of South Sudan to put people's well-being ahead of what Troika calls their own narrow political interest. We have Brian Adeba, Deputy Director of Policy at the Enough Project on the line to talk to us about the ceasefire violations. Brian, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Brian, tell us, bring us up to speed. What are you hearing from your sources about what is happening in South Sudan?
There are multiple violations of the ceasefire agreement in various sectors of the country, and this started happening immediately after the agreement was signed in Addis Ababa on December 21st. So what's happening right now is that in the last week or so, the violations are continuing. And the real question here really is what is IGAD or the Troika or the international community going to do to hold the perpetrators or the violators of this ceasefire agreement accountable? And that's a key question. And that's one thing that's not clearly stated in the cessation of hostilities agreement. And the perpetrators or the violators of this agreement know that they can get away with it. And the key question is, for how long can this continue? And the international community has to come to its senses in terms of enacting measures that can hold these violators accountable for their actions.
And Brian, why are these people fighting again? Why are these parties fighting after they have signed an agreement? We thought they all said that they would abide by the terms of the agreement.
Right. So when you look at the agreement, when it was signed, one could say that maybe there's an excuse for the continuation in fighting immediately after the agreement was signed, because the orders to cease fighting may have taken a while to get to the troops on the ground. So that you may say that if the fighting happened a day or two after the agreement was signed, maybe it can be excusable. But what we're seeing right now is that several days after the cessation of agreement was signed, the fighting is continuing. So there's no excuse at all to say that there was a delay in remitting orders to the troops on the grounds to stop fighting. So what we are seeing here is a deliberate violation of the cessation of hostilities. And it is indicative of a thinking among the warring parties that they really don't want this peace at this particular point. And that's why it's important to hold them accountable for their actions.
And Brian, I was also hearing that your hometown of Yei was attacked, and I'm sure you are in contact with your close relatives at home. Who attacked Yei?
Well, there are various reports that are coming, but in one instance, I think it was believed that the SPLMIO initiated an attack on government troops in the area, but This is, of course, an ongoing thing because the area itself around Lasu, around the county, has been an active front prior to the cessation of hostilities agreement. So this probably was a response to the continuing fighting there, but it is inexcusable at all.
And we are also reading a statement here from Troika, who are talking tough about possible punishment to violators of this agreement. Do you think these kind of statements sends a message to the commanders?
The time for talking is really, we are past the time of talking about consequences that are not going to be implemented. The real thing that IGAD doing, or the Troika needs to be doing, is get their act together and say, this is what we're going to do right away to hold the violators accountable. You know, all this talk is just, you know, is just water under the bridge, really. And the parties to the conflict know that they can get away with it. So far, what has happened? What has IGAD done to actually hold anyone accountable? What has the Troika done? They're just talking. What the Troika really needs to be doing, and the region, is to impact consequences on key violators. For instance, targeted sanctions is one thing that can still get people to know that there's action being taken to hold people accountable, and getting the region to actually play their part in enacting these targeted measures, financial measures, against the perpetrators of the conflict. We're not seeing this happening. What we're seeing is IGAD allowing former people who have been sanctioned to actually travel freely in the region. This is counterproductive to any measures to hold anyone accountable in South Sudan.
And so targeting their pockets, I'm just thinking about some commanders who even don't have a bank account. How would you target such people?
Well, we you know, that's true. There are commanders that don't have any bank accounts abroad or anything like that. But holding them accountable by ensuring that they don't travel in the region under whatever names, under whatever passports. So what we've seen right now in this conflict, we've seen people who don't have bank accounts who have been sanctioned, but who have been traveling freely in the region. They've been seen in neighboring countries. They've been seen in Ethiopia. They've been seen in Kenya. They've been seen in Uganda. So what the region is saying really is just thumping its nose at any actions that are designed to hold people accountable. And this is counterproductive in the long term for peace in South Sudan.
And Brian, I've been covering this conflict for the last 4 years, and we have been talking about these issues year in, year out. I'm sure you are looking at the conflict with a different lens. Is there any military solution to this conflict in South Sudan?
There is no military solution to this conflict. What will happen is, you know, lost territory, for instance, will be retaken by either side, and the calculations will change. This territory will also be retaken. It's an endless game of taking and ceding territory. And neither side has the power to decisively defeat the other in the conflict. So the solution to this conflict really is to get to the negotiating table, to see what the differences are, and to find a middle ground, and then arrive at a peaceful solution. The region, all the countries in the region are progressing, developing, building infrastructure, and uplifting the livelihoods of their people. Not South Sudan. South Sudan's leaders have to really want peace more than anyone else, more than IGAD, more than the international community. They must not allow geopolitical intrigues to stymie any efforts to realize a peaceful solution to this conflict in South Sudan. They must want peace more than anyone else, and the time is now.
And some critics have been putting IGAD on the spot that some of its members have a stake in South Sudan's conflict. They gave example of Uganda, they gave example of Kenya and Ethiopia. What is your reading about the interest of IGAD in South Sudan?
There are multiple interests in the region about South Sudan. The Ethiopians have their own designs. The Egyptians have come into the fray. The Sudanese and the Ugandans and the Kenyans. And we have seen an allying of the parties in the conflict. Uganda and Egypt almost on one page pitted against Ethiopia. And Ethiopia and Sudan pitted against other parties in the region. And the Kenyan sort of straddling a neutral zone there. So these intrigues all contribute to killing the peace process. For instance, as far as the Ugandans are concerned and the Egyptians, the solution to this conflict is reuniting the SPLM factions. And that's counterproductive. We know that the war has evolved. The factions that have come into the fighting scene have increased. It's no longer a binary conflict between the government and the Riek Machar's SPLM-IO, and we need to take this factor into account. But when we talk of reuniting the SPLM party, and then we have parties in this conflict, neighboring countries, pushing for the reunification, and at the same time half-heartedly committing to a cessation of hostilities or an agreement, these factors all contribute to actually undermining any meaningful peace process, and it needs to stop. But all of this really is premised on what the South Sudanese leaders need. They must want peace more than anyone else.
Brian, well, we will leave it at that. Thank you very much for speaking with us. That's Brian Adeba, Deputy Director of Policy at the Enough Project. He was speaking to me from Canada. Archbishop Paulino Lukudu of the Catholic Church in Juba says South Sudanese need peace. Lukudu says the leaders of the country should stop violating the agreements so peace can return to the country. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
Archbishop Paulino Lukudu, who presided over the New Year's Day Mass at St. Teresa Cathedral, where President Salva Kiir was in attendance, says lasting peace and the country's leaders' commitment to follow through on the ceasefire agreement they signed in Addis Ababa is the only thing that will make South Sudanese happy. Lukudu says since South Sudan gained its independence in 2011, moments of joy have been all too brief.
They are not the days of the year which are the ones giving us peace, the kind of peace that we are looking for. But it is we, our own selves, who are to make this year really mean bringing us lasting peace. It is we who are the ones to bring the reality of evil into our hearts, the evil that has caused us to lack peace last year.
Lukudu says South Sudan's warring parties should stop the blame game about violating agreements and instead commit to real peace and upholding the ceasefire deal signed at December's high-level revitalization forum.
People go and make reconciliation. They say, oh, today we are not going to fight again. And we make signs that we are not going to fight, we are not going to do bad, we are going to be good, we are going to be brothers and sisters. After 1 week, 10 days, 1 month, whatever period, we go back to fight or to do anything wrong. This is what we are. We are trying to say we would like to see the year 2018 a year of lasting peace. Not a peace of 2 days, 1 week, 10 days, but a peace that carry us throughout the year.
Lukudu wants to remind politicians that their job is not supposed to be about gaining power.
Politics is not to gain power. Politics is to serve the common good of the people of God. This is politics. If we don't have that meaning of why we are politicians, then we lose. We lose and we get into the politics of power, politics of wealth, and it is no more politics. That is bigger, Sogor Garamant, Fibele. My brothers, there is not much talking today. We want to have a new year.
Lukudu says South Sudanese, wherever, are not happy with the way the country have been going for the past 4 years.
The people now want to rest, indeed, from these guns, from this robbing, from this what? We have started well this year. With what is in front of us, we want also that this is a reality. Let the people of God rest. We are traumatized, all of us. And I think the next thing we shall need to do is to go for this trauma healing, wherever it is. We need to be healed in order to become normal people, normal citizens.
President Kiir told hundreds of churchgoers on Christmas that the ceasefire agreement will hold and that his troops will not go on offensive. The Kiir administration blamed the opposition for clashes between government and rebel forces in the Bentiu area of Koch, just hours after the deal was signed by representatives of the opposition and President Kiir. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The widow of South Sudan's founding father, John Garang, says she's moved by the suffering of the South Sudanese people. Rebecca Nyandeng says she went to Addis last month to encourage the warring parties to negotiate in good faith before they sign the ceasefire deal.
John, you know, my heart is bleeding. And at the same time, I'm ashamed as a South Sudanese and as a mother of people of South Sudan to see ourselves flying from capital to capital searching for peace. And we don't have that heart of seeing how our people are falling like flies. My heart bleeds to see the women being raped and they are delivering children that they don't even know their fathers, where they come from. And my heart bleed to see us giving birth to our children in the bushes of South Sudan. And our children are going to give birth to their children in also in the bushes and foreign countries in the refugees camp. Again, my heart bleed. I don't know, we South Sudanese, we are form of what I don't know what part of a soil that God has created us. And we are not even ashamed of coming here and not unite ourselves.
And what is your message for the delegates who have come for this revitalization forum?
South Sudanese, you mean?
Yes. What can you tell them?
What I need to tell them is for them to swallow their pride and look for the needy people of South Sudan, those who are suffering. I'm not talking about that who have died, but those who are going to die. Like 3 weeks ago, about 100 people were killed in Duk. The way we have torn our people apart, our people into tribes, into ethnic groups, into clans. Before it was Nuer and Dinka versus Equatorian, and now Dinka among themselves. This is I don't know this type of leadership, and I don't know what will come out of this government in Juba, because the government of Juba will never change. Dr. John used to say that the government in the north is too deformed to be reformed. It's the same thing now, the government in Juba is too deformed to be reformed. There is nothing that the government in Juba will deliver. But these things lie in our hand. As the delegates who have come here, what can we deliver to our people in this hall? And I was happy to hear that IGAD say that they were speaking in one voice, because IGAD, in the other hand, also have to unite their ranks and files.
Why do you say so?
I say so because IGAD was divided. From 2013, even during the 2017, there are some leaders in IGAD who are supporting leaders instead of supporting people of South Sudan. There are IGAD before the CPA, and during the CPA, they were supporting people of South Sudan. That's why we achieved the peace. But now they are supporting leaders. And why? Why supporting leaders? Leaders comes and they go. What the people of the country need.
Who are they supporting? I mean, who? Are they supporting who?
They're supporting, some of them are supporting President Salva. And why supporting President Salva? Who's President Salva for South Sudan? He's an individual like another individual South Sudanese who have been there, who have come and gone, and who will be born. Is that one like one of them? You know? But as a leader, what do you come and do? Is to build your legacy of what you will leave. But President Salva is leaving a legacy of destruction. But he has done a good job for people of South Sudan before. He fought in the First War, he fought in the SPLA. Why destroying South Sudanese? I, myself and my family, we have paid ultimate price for the people of South Sudan. We did. And there is nothing that we could want more than seeing South Sudan free and people of South Sudan free, and they live together. Because all the tribes of South Sudan, wherever they are the ones who form the borders of South Sudan.
This is going to be a 5-day deliberations. What are your expectations?
We should not come out here empty-handed. Because the eye of people of South Sudan, the suffering people who are in the refugees camp, who are in displaced people's camp, are here. We should unite ranks and files of our opposition leaders, all of us, and give up whatever personal gain that you want for yourself.
That's Rebecca Nyandeng, widow of South Sudan's founding father, John Garang. She was speaking with me in Addis last month. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at signs of breast cancer.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you are leaving your country, what is the most important thing you would pack to take with you?
I have a bangle that was given to me by my dad. I wouldn't leave that because I treasure it a lot. I love it because it was given to me because of the love.
My phone, of course, that one I can't leave it behind because anything can happen. And my phone, I have to communicate in case anything happens. I have to go with my phone if I'm leaving my country.
My sewing machine, because I would want to go out there and still be doing that work so that I can still sew for people.
My diary, because I have jotted a lot of things there that I will not want to forget.
I always take my sponge, my soap, and even the container. My children used to say, "You are so funny, mommy."
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday health segment, and today we are talking about early warning signs of breast cancer. Early detection of breast cancer saves life. Breast cancer is the most common cancer in women all over the world. As VOA's Carlo Pearson reports, scientists are working on finding new ways to detect breast cancer while they are studying existing screening methods to find out what is best.
During a mammogram, a technician takes an X-ray of a woman's breast that's compressed between two glass plates. A radiologist then examines the image for tumors. Mammograms undoubtedly save lives. The number of deaths from breast cancer has fallen by 30% in the U.S. since mammography was introduced in the 1970s. That's because when cancer is found early, the chances of beating it are greater. Mammograms are the best screening tools available, but they aren't 100% accurate. A mammogram can look normal even when cancer is present, and it can look abnormal even though there's no cancer in the breast at all. Standard mammograms are two-dimensional, but for the 40 to 50% of women with dense breasts, both tumors and breast tissue can show up as white masses on 2D images. Three-dimensional mammograms show a more detailed view of the breast, so women with fibrous or dense breasts may benefit from a 3D screening, says Dr. Otis Brawley at the American Cancer Society.
It might find disease that we need to find that two-dimensional does not. There are potential cons in that it has a higher cost, higher amount of radiation given every dose, every time a person has the test, as well as it may find a higher number of false positives.
Cost aside, one study involving 13 U.S. hospitals showed that three-dimensional mammograms picked up an additional 40% of invasive cancers. For an even better picture, a woman could have an automated whole breast ultrasound. During this procedure, a woman lies on her back as the ultrasound device moves in parallel rows, so no areas of the breast are missed. The exam captures between 3,000 and 5,000 images that are then interpreted by a radiologist. Dr. Megha Garg is the director of the Breast Imaging Program at the University of Missouri Cancer Center.
This is a new screening technique. It helps detect additional breast cancers in females who have got dense breasts.
The whole breast ultrasound doesn't use radiation, so it poses less of a risk than a mammogram does. But Garg says it's not time to ditch the standard mammogram.
This tool does not replace the traditional mammogram. Mammograms are the gold standard for finding breast cancer. This helps the mammogram in those females who have got dense breast.
Studies are underway to find out which techniques are the most effective. While North America, Western Europe, and Australia have the highest rates of breast cancer, the World Health Organization reports that almost 50% of the cases and nearly 60% of the deaths occur in less developed countries. If we could improve detection and treatment, at least 400,000 women's lives could be saved every year. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
We now turn to Malawi, where the push for more female members of parliament was dealt a blow when the government said it would not consider a proposal to create 28 automatic seats for women. Malawi ranks among the countries within the South African Development Community and the world where women are underrepresented in government. Lamek Masina has more from Blantyre.
Justice and Constitutional Affairs Minister Samuel Tembenu said the government removed the provision because it would be a disadvantage to women candidates in some constituencies. He said the provision would also involve a laborious and complicated legal process, including amending constitutional provisions and other electoral laws. Proponents of the provision say its removal is unfortunate. Esime Kainja is a member of the Special Law Commission that came up with the proposal. She told reporters that the 28-seat idea was the best option among many that were intended to increase the number of women in parliament.
There were so many options. There was an issue of taking quotas at party level. There was another option of maybe just taking one constituency per district to be attached to women. That was also did not work.
She says although the proposed 28 seats might sound irrational, it gave an assurance that Malawi would achieve at least 30% of female representation in parliament, as required by SADC protocol, which the bloc adopted in 2008 with the goal of ensuring equal rights for women and an end to discrimination. Out of 193 members of Malawi's parliament, only 32 are women. Emma Galia is the national coordinator for the NGO Gender Coordination Network, which has long headed Malawi's 50-50 campaign for equal gender representation.
For the executive to remove that recommendation, now I'm beginning to doubt if Malawi is really serious about achieving gender equality and women's empowerment in the area of politics. And it is very sad that it is happening to us in this way.
Kalia says Malawi should have learned from other countries like South Africa, Mozambique and Uganda, where similar provisions have helped increase the number of women in decision-making positions. Gender activists say they are attempting to have the provision reconsidered. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now go to Yambio with a traditional Zande song by Tutu. Mama sokote chile kumamu mamuro ya. Mama sokote chile kumamu mamuro ya. Mama sokote chile kipanganito ya. Mama sokote chile kumamu mamuro ya. Mama sokote chile kumamu mamuro bekele shindo. Mama sokote chile kumamu mamuro ya. Mama sokote chile kumamu mamburo baby lipo. Mama sokote chile kumamu mamburo ya. Mama sokote chile kumamu mamburo baby nambara. Mama sokote chile kumamu mamburo bekele fuko. Mama sokote chile kumamu mamburo ya. Mama sokote chile kumamu mamburo be onya. Mama sokote chile kumamu mamburo ya. Bakita kewara chile kipanganito tamale. Mama sokote chile kumamu mamburo ya. Bakita ngundu wa chile kumamu mamburo ya. Mama sokote chile kumamu mamburo ya. Mayanga jumara chile kipanganito ya. We've been listening to Tutu with that traditional Zande song. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be here. Do you have a comment about our show? Please let us know by sending an email to southsudan@voanews.com. You can also check us out on our Facebook site. Our name on Facebook is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Mama sokote chile kumamu mamburo ya.